Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you, filling in for Jim Rome. Jim back on Monday. Here, me, I'm here today and yesterday. Awesome. Very, very cool, heady stuff. I've told this a lot, but I'm going to keep saying it because I think gratitude matters and recognizing people who were good to you is important. And Jim Rome is one of those people. And so it is very cool. And clones, believe me, I get how lucky I am to be sitting here in this chair. The program, as always, is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We've already had three great guests. One of them is going to cost me $500. Another one who won't cost me a cent, Howard Beck, coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes. Had Andy Roddick on the show, I guess it was exactly an hour ago, and Andy and I have an outstanding bet that I mentioned, and apparently it's on. He's coming back to L.A. at some point, and I'm going to play him in a tennis match. He's going to use a frying pan. I'm going to use a tennis racket, and it's going to be for $500. So I'm going to make Adam Hawk and every other person I know play tennis just put me through the it's training time. And guys, if I win that bet, drinks are on me, or pizza or whatever. You guys probably can't drink during the show. I'll send you something, or I can send you drinks after the show. Whatever you guys drink, I got all the way. Yeah, that's good. I'm happy for Carson Wentz. I'm happy for anybody that gets their money. Do it. It's America. Get yours. In my profession, in radio and TV and writing, it is amazing. And again, this is one of the reasons I love Jim Rome. I'm just a human being. A lot of successful people in this business don't want other people to be successful. I've never understood it. I've never gotten it. People are rooting for failure. So you talk about sports for a living, you sell insurance, you play professional football, whatever you're doing, I hope you get yours. Go get your money. Good for Carson Wentz on that four-year, $128 million extension that kicks in a couple years. That'll be a $32 million per average for Wentz to play quarterback for the Eagles when those dollars, that new part of the extension kicks in. Good for him. I just don't think it's going to work. And I understand why the Eagles did what they did. It's very rare in any business, especially in professional sports, to see an organization put someone first, like they did Nick Foles, and just say, you know what, just go get paid somewhere else. And the consequence of that really decent behavior as human beings is you got to pay Carson Wentz. I like Wentz. I like Wentz as a player. We've seen him be, when he's been healthy, he's been a stud. A couple years ago, before he got injured, he would have been almost certainly the MVP of the National Football League. But here's the reality. The reason, and I discussed this earlier, and you know this, that the NFL is as successful just as a money-making sports machine as they are, is because of the parity. And how does parity happen? You don't get a bunch of owners in a room and say, let's all play by the same rules, gee golly, that's a good idea. You force a cap on these teams. There's only so many resources every single organization can spend in the pursuit of building a winner. And if you go through the quarterbacks who have gotten paid, great quarterbacks, quarterbacks in a lot of these cases, I'll go through them, in almost every case, with a lot more success than Carson Wentz, the resources it takes to maintain those QBs on those teams means you have to take resources away from other places. The recipe for a successful run right now in the NFL is one of two things. Have Tom Brady on your team. And by the way, Tom Brady makes a lot less money than he should. His average is just around $15 million a year. He's always taking less for the sake of the team. Or have a really, really young quarterback who's on a rookie deal and be able to surround that rookie quarterback with a whole bunch of pieces where you spend your money on something else. Look at the Rams and Jared Goff and his deal. Look at the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes on that rookie deal. Maybe that'll be true for Deshaun Watson and that Texans team. That Texans team won 11 games last year. The Cowboys are going to have to pay Dak Prescott a ton of money. I'm not going to be mad at them for doing it, but it's going to handcuff them in the years ahead. Russell Wilson is an absolute stud. Given away that Super Bowl notwithstanding, he's an absolute machine. But he's going to make $35 million a year, sign that new deal in the offseason. The jury's out on whether that's going to make Seattle successful. History says no. I'm not a big Roethlisberger guy. I'm not a Ben Roethlisberger guy. I know he's called Big Ben most places on the show that I host at night here on CBS Sports Radio, writer than you, 6 to 10 Eastern time. He's Little Ben. The guy is going to make $34 million a year now with his new deal that he got in the offseason. I am not a believer that that Steelers organization will have the same kind of success, you know, where they keep winning till they play the Patriots without Le'Veon Bell and AB. I just don't buy it. Aaron Rodgers, at least in terms of yearly salary, just how much he makes per year, that deal he signed last year, $33.5 million. Green Bay goes 6-9-1. I know the injury was out there. Let's take Matt Ryan as an example. Matt Ryan came as close as you can possibly come to a Super Bowl without actually winning one. And he got, last offseason, I think it was, that $30 million deal. Atlanta turns around and goes 7-9. Kirk Cousins, right? The prize of free agency in the NFL a year and a few months ago when the Super Bowl was in Minneapolis. Cousins was walking around when the news came that Alex Smith had been traded to Washington, which was obviously going to free up Cousins, walking around like homecoming king, like he owned the place. Good for him. And they threw a bunch of money at him. $28 million a year. $87 million, I think it was, over the 3 years, guaranteed. Minnesota took a step back last year, 8-7-1. They were decidedly mediocre. It's hard to assess Jimmy Garoppolo. He's the sixth highest paid guy at $27.5 million. How about Matt Stafford? 2017, ton of money, especially at the time. Since they gave Stafford that nearly $30 million a year, 15-17. Derek Carr got $25 million in the 2017 offseason. Team's gone 10-22 since then. Even Andrew Luck's gotten paid. Team's gone 22-26. Now, it's a little bit of a garbage stat because he missed a bunch of time. You tie up all kinds of money with your quarterback, it is hard to put the pieces around them. And it's easier said than done. It's not easy to draft a Patrick Mahomes. But the teams right now that have quarterbacks that make very little money are in large part the teams that have a real chance to do some damage this year because they can surround those players, those resources that aren't going to these quarterbacks, with other guys. Baker Mayfield obviously doesn't make that much money relative to the NFL, $8 million. And that Browns team has the luxury to go out there and spend a bunch of money on a bunch of pieces. I don't buy the Jets at all, but Sam Darnold makes a little bit of cash. Mitchell Trubisky, my Bears. And by the way, let me say this. I was totally wrong on Trubisky. I was one of those irrational, angry Bears fans when they went up and they got him. Where was it? Number two. Threw things at walls, said words I can't say on the radio. But the plan worked. You go out, you get Khalil Mack, you can invest in that defense, you can bring in a receiver. However long Mitchell Trubisky is on that rookie deal, it gives the Bears a window to be really good and really competitive. I brought up Jared Goff. He makes $7 million a year. Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. I mean, Lamar Jackson's really interesting with the Ravens. Again, a young quarterback, you don't pay him very much money. He was not a top 10, 12 pick. Later in the draft, what second round I think it was, and that's a guy who now has a chance to have some success. I hate the Carson Wentz signing for the Eagles, even though it's what you have to do. I understand why the Cowboys are going to have to make the mistake of giving Dak Prescott all kinds of money. And a large part for the Cowboys, it's because you can have an incredibly well-run organization. The Chiefs have had some success, clearly, at evaluating offensive talent and bringing it in. And that's an Andy Reid reality going back to the Eagles. The Rams are a team that have done a really good job with Sean McVay at turning what they had, Jared Goff, into a very serviceable, if you want to argue really good, somewhere in that range quarterback under McVay. Matt Nagy in Chicago, a big part of the reason Trubisky's made that jump. It's hard to find either the right quarterback who's a guaranteed right QB, and I think Deshaun Watson fits, whatever you think of Bill O'Brien, the head coach down there, or to find the head coach, the young supposed geniuses, who can turn so-so QBs into actual offensive weapons. It's hard to do if you're well-run. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, do you really trust Jerry Jones to make the right selection at the quarterback position again in an NFL draft? I don't. You got to pay Dak. Do you really trust the Eagles to move on from Carson Wentz and to find the right QB? Probably not. But the reality is that the majority of teams that throw a ton of money in the NFL at their quarterbacks struggle to have the kind of success that they want to have. The recipe, if you have the guts to execute it, is go out there and actually put your resources and your energy into hiring and finding the right head coach who knows how to work with young quarterbacks, who's offensively inclined, who can see the game and all its nuances the way it's played today. And it's why so many people went out and tried to hire replacements for their head coaching jobs in the hope to get another Sean McVay. There was a time in the NFL where if you just shook McVay's hand and you were under the age of 40, you can get a head coaching job. We'll see how that works for LaFleur in Green Bay. It's not like his offensive coordinating duties last season give you a lot of confidence. Maybe it'll work. Maybe him and Aaron Rodgers is going to work. Carson Wentz hasn't been able to stay healthy, and I'm a fan. I think he's an incredible quarterback when he's out there. But that is a lot of money to give a quarterback like Derek Carr or Matt Stafford or Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, any of these guys who you feel like you plug him in, you're going to win. Carson Wentz hasn't been healthy for the runs for the Eagles the last few years. And if Nick Foles' pass in that game in the postseason this past year doesn't go through the arms of his receiver, we might be talking about the Nick Foles miracle part two. So there's all this coverage today about Wentz and the money. And I think the reality is, I understand why the Eagles are doing what they're doing, but you better have a really, really impressive front office, or Wentz better be a genius. There's a reason. Think about, and I get it. Tom Brady is married to a supermodel who makes more money than he does. So it's really easy, or easier, for him to take less cash. Tom Brady's not taking less money than the market would offer him because he believes in charity for his fellow teammates in New England. Tom Brady's making $15 million a year when he can command whatever the hell he wants to command because he understands the math. Take the money and put it somewhere else. Build me a winner. I want Super Bowls. It's going to be a lot harder for the Eagles to compete now, having to pay Wentz that kind of money, especially when that money kicks in. Do you really believe the Seahawks are going to be a dominant force without... And they have a really... To be fair, Seattle might be doing this in reverse, spending money on a quarterback and then having all of these young guys on the defensive side who absolutely came into their own at the last half of the season. But we haven't seen that. We haven't seen that work. What we've seen for the most part is quarterbacks who are on deals that are below market. Drew Brees is really the only exception. Deals below market or rookie deals, and they build a winner around them as quickly as they can. That's why, for me, I love the Chiefs this upcoming season. I like the Bears this upcoming season. I think Houston's really interesting if they can protect Deshaun Watson. That dude, we forget how good that guy is. And I know Mahomes is the story of the moment. If you go back and you look at Deshaun Watson's first 16 games, because he missed a big chunk in his rookie season, so you've got to put two seasons together, and you compare his numbers to Mahomes' numbers, they're a lot closer than you'd think. The young quarterbacks who are studs, who don't make a lot of money, that's where the future is. Don't love the Carson Wentz contract, even though I understand why the Eagles, like a lot of teams, don't have a lot of confidence or the guts to move on from their franchise quarterback and go try to find somebody in the draft. Don't love the deal. 1-800-636-8686 is the phone number here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. Rome at haveatake.com, at Jim Rome on Twitter, jimrome.com. You can hit me up too. Sports Ryder, sports in my last name, R-E-I-T-E-R. Bill Ryder filling in. Love being here. Love doing it. Going to circle back to a little finals talk. Howard Beck, my former neighbor in Brooklyn before I moved back to L.A., and one of the best writers in the country, covers the NBA as a national columnist for Bleach Report. Howard is going to be on the Jim Rome Show when we come back in just a moment here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim. Clone Smackoff 25 is proudly presented by our friends at Vivid Seats. And this year, Vivid Seats is giving every Smackoff caller that makes the air on June 21st $50 towards the purchase of tickets on VividSeats.com or the Vivid Seats app. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Download the Vivid Seats app or visit VividSeats.com. I think he's one of the best, if not the best, NBA writers in the country. You read him at Bleacher Report, my former kind of neighbor in Brooklyn, which I miss, even though it's great to be back out in Southern California. The one and only Howard Beck. Greetings, Mr. Beck.
Greetings, Mr. Ryder. Since this is not your show, are you still writer than me right now, or do I get to be writer for once?
Yeah, let's go. You're writer than me today. You want to be writer than you today? I know you love how grammatically incorrect that is.
I want to be more right than you.
You can be. Howard Beck, this is that moment. I almost wore a Park Slope shirt for you, but it's the Jim Rome Show, so I got in the fancy clothes. All right, so nice. I didn't do a bunch. I know how much you hate hot takes, so I'm going to try to think of some to throw your way in a minute. But there is some news going on. Klay Thompson sounds like is going to play tonight. Kevin Durant will not. How significant do you think Klay's return is going to be for this Warriors team?
I mean, it's huge in so many ways. And listen, is Klay Thompson Kevin Durant? Does he have that kind of repertoire and versatility and dominance? No, but the core of this team for the last 5 years in this run, this dynastic run, has been the Splash Brothers. That's where this all began. It began with Curry and Klay, and also Draymond Green, of course. And so there's partially, I think, it's important for identity and comfort. It's important for his shooting. Obviously, he's one of the greatest shooters of all time. It's important for his defense, which I think has been the most overlooked part of his absence the other night, in that, yeah, they had to really ride Steph Curry hard just to get points on the board the other night in Game 3. But and Klay will help that tremendously, and his gravity will help the rest of that offense and just make things easier on everybody. But defensively, listen, they gave up, 123? You know, they don't have a lot of great perimeter defenders or length on the perimeter without Klay and KD. And so having Klay Thompson back is going to give them that much more versatility. It helps their depth again. So listen, as long as Klay is Klay Thompson, as long as he is healthy enough, and look, we haven't seen him on the court yet and what the effects of that that pulled calf will be. If he's okay, if he's as spry as usual, it's a huge boost to them. And I got to think that that's also just the boost to their spirits that they need to get this thing tied up again.
Howard Beck from Bleacher Report. I know we don't know, so this is guesswork here, but Kevin Durant hasn't practiced, and I know I shouldn't play armchair psychologist, but Steve Kerr seems unusually vague when discussing KD. When do you think we're going to actually see Kevin Durant in this series?
I mean, listen, it's all been guesswork from the beginning, and it remains guesswork, so I don't want to say that I know anything definitively. I don't think anybody really does, and if the Warriors do, they've certainly been pretty coy about it. Here's the way I read it. He was never going to come back until he had at least gotten in a contact practice, whether that's 2-on-2, 3-on-3, or 5-on-5. He needed to get on the court first. And so my feeling all along was, until we hear that he's done that, we shouldn't be expecting him to magically reappear. And Kerr hinted a couple days ago that that day was coming, the scrimmage was coming, and he thought it was going to be yesterday. It turned out it wasn't. He said, no, it may happen tomorrow, meaning today, Friday. So if Durant scrimmages or has scrimmaged today at some point, even 3-on-3, and if he's fine in terms of the 24 hours after that, if he doesn't have any setbacks and is fine tomorrow, tomorrow's a travel day, Sunday he could practice again in full, and I think that puts him on pace to play Monday night in Game 5 in Toronto. That sounds reasonable to me, assuming that he actually gets in at least one contact practice and has no setbacks.
Howard, we've got a series where Toronto's up 2-1, and still, and I know they've been through this before, the Warriors do not sound, and you're there, I'm watching it on television, do not sound that concerned. Draymond Green has pointed out accurately that when their back is against the wall, the Warriors have tended to respond over this now five-year run. Steph Curry said something similar. Steve Kerr has said something similar. Is there any chance in your mind that their confidence could become overconfidence and give the Raptors a little bit more of an edge in this game tonight?
I don't think so. Look, you're down 2-1 in a series. The Warriors obviously have a lot of confidence and swagger about them that's earned by everything they've done over the last 5 years. But they are trailing in the series. They know that going down 3-1, normally is a death knell. We know that it hasn't been at times. It wasn't for the Cavaliers against the Warriors, and it wasn't for the Warriors against the Thunder right before that a few years ago. But I don't think there's anything about the Warriors and their experience that would allow them to lose perspective on how easily something like this can get away from you. So I think we'll see the best of the Warriors tonight. I kind of expect them to win. I expected this whole finals to be a slog, to be a back-and-forth battle, that it would go 6 or 7. And I still think that's going to be the case. I think the Warriors win this one tonight.
All right, Howard Beck, I'm sorry to ask you about silly things, but – someone in my profession introduced into the record in a way that, just I was stunned by. There was a television report by a television personality and radio personality, and I believe you were a voter, that you guys all got together back in that NBA Finals, that first one for the Warriors, and decided you couldn't give LeBron an NBA Finals MVP because it had to be Steph or Andre Iguodala. I'm presuming that is hot garbage, but I wanted to ask you about it since I have you on the air.
No, that was that has since been retracted. The person in question was corrected by a number of writers. I didn't reach out directly, but others did. The NBA also reached out to correct the record on that, and the person in question has publicly said, I got it wrong, and I apologize for putting that out there. I will just tell you from my perspective, you know, during that finals, so the first Warriors-Cavs finals, that's the year where Kyrie goes down early in the series, Kevin Love is already out, and LeBron gets that series to six games with just this Herculean effort, just absolutely incredible. And I was among, there were 11 voters for Finals MVP. I was one of, I believe, four who voted for LeBron for MVP despite him losing the finals. I thought, you know, it's a really high bar to give somebody Finals MVP on the losing team. It's only happened once in history, and it was Jerry West 1,000 years ago. But if ever, to me, there was a dominant performance that merited that that rare exception, I thought it was LeBron in 2015. And on top of that, nobody on the Warriors, no one person on the Warriors, this is not a Steph Curry struggled take that I'm giving you, no one player in the Warriors did I think absolutely was standing out above the rest to give Finals MVP. It was kind of a toss-up potentially among even the Warriors, and LeBron had dominated that series in a way that no single Warrior had. So I was among the four who voted that way. No, there was no other discussions. You know, the voters don't even know who else is voting. There's no way to confer. You're handed the ballot in the midst of the game, and you do it on the fly. I think I knew a little ahead of time because the NBA, I think, had asked me ahead of time, hey, if you get a ballot, are you okay with voting this year? And so I knew I was going to vote, and so I'd given it a lot of thought. But there's no time for anybody to be conferring or conspiring or any of this other stuff. It's all silliness.
All right, Howard Beck, because I know you love hot takes and you're a big fan of predictions that are asked to be made way too soon. Are you ready for a couple of those on the Jim Rome Show?
You love doing this to me. Fire away.
All right, so we're three games in. I recognize that. But if you were to vote and things play out the exact same way, to date, who is the finals MVP for each of these teams so far?
Oh, my. Honestly, because we're only three games in, I hadn't even given that 2 seconds of thought.
Yeah.
By default with Toronto, it's got to be Kawhi. And, you know, that's despite, you know, Siakam obviously being the biggest force in game one, but I think Kawhi is the more important through line so far for them. On the Warriors side of it, it's got to be Curry. Durant is gone. Klay's missed a game already. There's no other single Warrior who you would look at. I mean, you could make a case for Draymond.
I was going to ask you about Draymond, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's an all-around effort there. But I think, listen, on that one, that's a really tough one to start trying to figure out three games in, not knowing where this is going. But if the Warriors tie this up tonight, you know, if it's Curry going for 40 or if it's Klay somehow going for 40 and you know, locking up, you know, Kyle Lowry and Danny Green and whoever else he may guard in the course of a game. He may guard just about everybody. I mean, it could shift. Listen, if Durant comes back in game five and saves the series, let's say the Warriors are down 3-1 and Durant leads them back to three straight wins, it could still be Durant. Like, all things are on the table.
I don't know why, Howard Beck. That is my nightmare. Do you have the same level of confidence that the Warriors are going to even the series tonight that Draymond Green has?
I think they will. I mean, I don't know about confidence, but my gut says they will. My gut is frequently wrong and sometimes suffering from indigestion, but right now I think they will.
Howard Beck from Bleach Report on the program. A few non-finals questions for you, Howard. Some reports out of Los Angeles that if the Lakers swing and miss in free agency this summer and or the trade market, which is certainly in the realm of possibilities, that LeBron James' tenure in Los Angeles may not be as long as his contract. Do you have any sense of that? Do you buy that? Do you think it's actually reasonable that LeBron James, let's say in a year or a year and a half, could be somewhere other than a Lakers jersey?
It would be strange. He was going year to year on contracts for the longest time and then decided to go all in with the Lakers on that 3+1 deal last summer. And while it has obviously not gone the way he had hoped, and while that franchise has been in utter disarray for the last couple of months, it would still surprise me to see him just pull the ripcord, and especially if he's going to wait another year or so to do it, because by that point, how much elite-level play does he have left? You know, it's you know, eroding a little bit more every year. And I'm not one who thinks that he's already fallen off the cliff. People think that, like, oh, LeBron's just done. Last year he was – no, he put up 28-7-7, or excuse me, I think it was 27-8-8 last season. And, yes, I know, the numbers don't say everything, and, yes, his defense slipped, all that stuff. If you got the right talent around him again, I think he's fine. I think he's leading a playoff team again at minimum. But another year from now, if that's when he decided, get me out of here, trade me, well, that's a problem. I mean, by that point, I don't know, you know, there's another year of erosion. Do you really want to try to start over again somewhere else? Where would that be? L.A. is where he wanted to be, where his family wanted to be. So it would just strike me as very strange. But, again, we never anticipated a situation like this where the Lakers would put him in a position where he actually even has to contemplate it.
Howard Beck here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in. Howard, how likely is it that you think, if Daryl Morey is really open to this, that there would be a suitor, a buyer, who would put up whatever the proper price is in a trade for Chris Paul, given that contract and his agent? How likely is it you think Daryl Morey truly, as reported, is open to trading Chris Paul?
We should. Well, first of all, I believe, knowing Daryl Morey as I do, and the Rockets and the way that they've operated, I believe all things would be on the table. Like, James Harden trade, probably not, of course. But I think just about everything short of that would be on the table. They're always aggressive, always ambitious. You could even say ruthless at times. They will do, and Daryl will do whatever's necessary to kind of get them out of this rut and try to advance them further, because you don't want to squander James Harden's prime as an MVP-type player. But trading Chris Paul, while we should never say never, we've all often said, you know, player X is the most untradeable contract in the league. And there's always one or two that we think just will never, and they always end up getting moved somehow. Somehow it happens. And I don't think there's a team out there that would trade for Chris Paul. I can't imagine anybody trading for that contract, considering his age and the size of the deal and the years left. But I've seen too much to say it's impossible. I'll just say that I will be shocked to see it. Not impossible, but a very, very difficult one to pull off.
It only takes one, I suppose. All right, last one for you. Anthony Davis, potentially a big prize in the trade market. David Griffin, well-respected GM, now in charge there, has met with AD, reportedly is now open to and sort of fielding what you have to do in that role as the head of basketball operations. What would be the price? What's out there? How likely is it that Anthony Davis is somewhere before the opening part of the next regular season? And how would you handicap who actually has a chance to land him if he's going somewhere?
Again, my gut on this one is he's definitely somewhere else by opening night. I just can't see. There's been no indication that he softened his stance and that he's willing to entertain staying for a while to see what David Griffin can pull off. That's obviously been Griff's first priority is, hey, look, I'm new administration here, new sheriff in town. Give us some time to show you what we can do. But it seems like this is a, you know, horse is already out of the barn and all that kind of stuff, and it's just you can't get it back. And so if that's the case, and that seems to be, then you don't want to go into next season with this still hanging over you. It'd just be too awkward, and they need clarity. Griff is going to want to start off his tenure in a more positive light and with a clean slate and knowing what their direction is. So I think Anthony Davis is absolutely somewhere else by opening night. As to where he goes, I think it was a report from Dave McMenamin from ESPN, who's very plugged in, saying that under Griffin, they're going to reconsider or reassess what the Lakers' offer had been that the previous administration had rejected. So the Lakers, it would seem, are definitely still in this or back in it. I still think you shouldn't rule out the Celtics, even if they lose Kyrie. They've got interesting offers they could make. Maybe they don't go as far as they would have with Kyrie in hand, because it means AD may not want to stay. But I think they'd still take a swing at it. I think that the Clippers can make a really compelling offer. I think the Nets could make a compelling offer, and the Nets are doing some interesting things. I think there will be candidates, teams that we aren't even talking about yet that will get in the mix somehow. And my favorite dark horse is the Denver Nuggets, who, while they don't have that one silver bullet type trade chip, because they're not going to trade Jokic. But if they built a deal around Jamal Murray and some of their other players, they've just got such great rotation depth. I think they've got all their own picks. They could make an interesting offer. I think they'll at least look into it. I'm not saying that's where he'll end up. But I, you know, it's too soon to say where he ends up. I just know that there's going to be a very active market in which there are going to be more teams than just the usual ones we've heard of in Boston and L.A. And by the way, the Knicks, of course, goes without saying they're going to try too. I don't think they've got the assets to pull it off.
Howard Beck, as always, great stuff, buddy. Thanks for the time.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
See you, brother. Howard Beck from Bleacher Report. This is the Jim Rome Show. I'm Bill Rutter filling in, and we're going to close it out in just a minute after the... Welcome back in to the Jim Rome Show. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see I'm not Jim, I'm Bill Rutter filling in. Also here on CBS Sports Radio. What a fast 3 hours. A lot of fun hanging out with the guys. James Kelly, Alvin DeLauro, Adam Hawk. Appreciate those dudes very, very much. Incredible crew. Make what for me is a career bucket list thing really easy on top of being incredibly, incredibly gratifying and a lot of fun. And thanks to the guys back in New York City, the stoic one, Tom DeCelestino, whose silence fills us with so much joy, and the one and only Stuart Kovacs. Tom just ran away. Stuart Kovacs, who is the executive producer of the program that I do at night. Stu, again, didn't bring his... When we're doing the show from 6 to 10, Eastern, Stu's wearing leather and chain things. He's a motorcycle guy, but he's very, very low-key here on the Jim Rome Show. Appreciate both those guys as well. I'm Bill Ryder. I'm on Twitter, Sports Ryder, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Thank you so much for hanging out, for being here, for bearing with me. Jim is back on Monday. I've been here the last 2 days. It's been awesome. And if you need more Bill Ryder in your life, I have a solution. CBS Sports HQ has a streaming sports network, and I'll be on there in a couple hours doing my show, Writer's Block, because every single thing involving my career has to have a pun in it, right? Sports Writer on Twitter, Writer's Block over on HQ, Writer Than You on CBS Sports Radio, 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific is the streaming sports show. We had Deshaun Watson on yesterday, tried to have some cool guests on the program. Thank you also. We had 4 guests who were awesome today. Jerry Harrison Jr., appreciate his time and perspective, former longtime major leaguer. Thank you to Andy Radu, who came on the show and marveled accurately that people still pay me to do this. I'm with Andy on that. Talk some tennis. Penny Hardaway an hour ago, and you just heard from Howard Beck. Game 3 is over. Game 3 is in the books. Game 4 of the NBA Finals tonight at Oracle Arena. And one of the stories out of this finals that hasn't been talked about a lot, I mean, I've hit it a little bit. I think I hit a little bit yesterday on this show and certainly on my own show. Oracle Arena is a legendary, legendary place that hasn't gotten necessarily the love that it deserves for being a force in sports, because as loyal as those fans have been, as connected as that community in the Bay Area and in Oakland is to the Warriors, until 4 years ago, the Warriors were an abysmal basketball team and a brutal organization. But we're now staring down what'll be the final, maybe more likely the second to last game ever at Oracle Arena. This is the way of things. It's certainly the way of San Francisco. Everything is upward and onward. There's so much tech money, so much wealth creation that it makes sense that they're going to go from what is. And from the outside, in Oracle fans, Warriors fans, I don't mean it as a put down. Oracle's not exactly the most beautiful piece of architecture on the face of the earth. But when you get in there, it is a very cool place. And you have everyday fans. You don't have to be incredibly wealthy to be someone who gets to sit relatively close. Families have passed down tickets. Not going to be true. A little bit different when it moves to downtown San Francisco not very long from now. It's time to answer your Ask the Pros question, where you, the clones, get to submit a question at cbssportsradio.com/AskThePros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Here is the question. Bill, hey, what's up? The U.S. Open is next week at Pebble Beach. Tigers won a U.S. Open at Pebble before, but Brooks Koepka seems to be the guy to beat at any major these days. Tiger is 42 and has 15 majors. Brooks is 29 and has 4. Koepka's so good in these moments. Who do you have winning at the U.S. Open, and how many majors will each of those guys finish with? Thanks, James in Pasadena, California, just off of Del Mar and Lake Street. James, great question. Yeah, Koepka is such an interesting, I don't know if phenomenon is the term, but he has won 4 of his last 8 majors, which is an absurd rate. He's a machine out there. And Tiger, you're right. I mean, this is going to be, so Pebble's going to be a lot different than what we saw at Bethpage Black at the PGA. This is, and that was, Bethpage Black was a course where if you hit the ball a billion miles, you're going to have a real advantage, and that applies to Koepka. Pebble's going to be a lot more of a precision course, and at this point in Tiger's career, that's an advantage for Tiger Woods. He is not going to outdrive guys when he's playing well, and we've seen that it kind of comes and goes. Obviously, at the Masters, Tiger was, I mean, it was epic. It was amazing. It broke Vegas. James, I'm not the wrong guy to ask. I'm just biased. I love Tiger Woods. I love his greatness. It is to me, I thought, I'm a little bit younger than Tiger. I thought he was going to be our Babe Ruth, the guy that was going to destroy every record, redefine a sport, and set a legacy of excellence that would be unmatched in any of the sports in my lifetime, and that I would literally tell my kids and grandkids about Tiger Woods. And we know all the stuff that happened. We know everything that went down. Felt like he'd never get past Jack. So I always want the answer to be Tiger. I always want to say Tiger Woods. I'm the guy that kept saying again and again, Tiger's going to get another one. And when I finally gave the ghost up on that, he won the Masters. So good job, Tiger. But if he's going to win another one this year, it's probably going to be it's going to be this one and not the Open Championship across the pond. Although also a place where you can do some precision. And we certainly saw what Tom Watson at 59 a few years ago give away what would have been an amazing major late in his career. All of that said, Koepka is the favorite. I don't know what it is about Brooks Koepka. It might be this. Brooks Koepka, unlike a lot of guys, including Tiger Woods, was not a come out of college, join the pros, go pro, play in the PGA Tour. He had to go out there on a variety of lower tours in Europe and elsewhere and grind his way to a living. And there was pressure to make cuts and make cards. He was playing for money, not just for wealth, which is a different thing. He was playing sometimes paycheck to paycheck, and clearly that experience early in his career has made him pretty steely-eyed in the face of whatever pressure, whatever magnitude starts to weigh on guys when there's a major. I interviewed Colin Montgomery on the TV show a couple weeks ago, and Colin just talked about how, and Colin Montgomery was a guy that never won a major but came close a few times. Colin talked about how there is just this different vibe and this different feel, and that it used to be Tiger Woods alone who had just an emotional and mental, probably more mental advantage to those moments. And while that's gone away for Tiger, right, people aren't afraid of him anymore. Brooks Koepka has taken over that space, even if we haven't given him credit for it. People are afraid of Brooks Koepka in these moments on Sundays. And Brooks Koepka, for whatever reason, doesn't fade. He's also, I mean, the guy finishes second at feels like every other one of these majors that he doesn't actually win. So I want to tell you, long-winded way of saying here on the Jim Rome Show, filling in James in Pasadena, I want to tell you, Tiger, I'm probably going to lose money again betting on Tiger because you should never bet with your heart. It's probably, the favorite is Brooks Koepka. I'm not taking Koepka over the field, but you've got to give me one guy, I'm taking Brooks Koepka. This was a lot of fun. Thank you to the guys for making this so easy. Thank you to all the guests who came on the show yesterday and today. Thank you to Jim Rome, who has been a huge difference maker in my career just because the guy is remarkably talented and incredibly gracious to people as they're working their way up. And those are rare things individually, certainly in combination. So it really is, clones, a thrill. I'm one of you, and to be sitting here in this chair is one of the coolest things of my career. Appreciate you. Have a great, great weekend. My name is Bill Reiter. I'm on Twitter at SportsWriter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Jim is back Monday. You can catch me 6 to 10 Eastern on CBS Sports Radio. See you next time.